Welcome back, New You Maniacs, to the Spinner Rack here at Season 4 of the Marvel New Universe Comics Podcast, the voice of the new universe, Episode 73, lots of episodes, right? That's a lot. As usual, we are your hosts.
Steven with DP7 number 20, and
Andy with occasional cries for help. I'll try and keep it down. 1986, our new universe was launched as its own imprint from Marvel Comics, dedicated to a more grounded and less fantastic approach to comics and world building. The original idea was the world outside your window with real-time progress and greater realism. After the first year, some books were canceled, although we are seeing their characters in other places, like this issue. And the remaining books have gotten consistent creative teams, and some origins were streamlined. And also probably becoming more action-oriented in the wake of The Pit, our world-shaking disaster slash black event slash mediocre comic book. With our podcast, you can follow along with us each week and go through each comic in the order they hit the spinner rack, which honestly you should just do at this point if you're listening to issue episode 73, or just check out individual comics if you already have a favorite. That's fine too. Should be a season 4 trivia challenge on our website, kickersinc.com. You can also find us on X with regular updates at Kickers Inc.
Always pushing that X thing, man. I don't know.
One of these days we'll get through that without commenting on the title of that social media platform. Probably not. Yeah, so this week we're back to our roaming band of do-gooders, the Scooby and the gang. I mean, DP7. In the wake of the white event, seven random people with paranormal powers found themselves seeking help at the clinic. Now, in the wake of the pit, can they use their powers to help one another and hopefully not die in the pit?
This week, DP7 number 20, Dave and Jeff thought they had it bad being stranded at the bottom of the pit. But no sooner does DP7 rescue them than they all have to face Pit Bull, the paranormal with the sunny disposition of the Hulk. Hulk is not part of the new universe. Wild Dogs is written by Mark Gruenwald, penciled by Paul Ryan, and inked by Danny Bullinati.
That was epic sounding. Also, we got maybe a few scraps of universe news left and some paranormal, right? Our funny titled DP7 mailbag.
I will never, never forgive them for it. Was letters to DP7. That's what it was supposed to be, always be.
It has ruined my childhood.
Okay. So, going through DP7 number 20, which is cover
dated. The universe was supposed to be different. We weren't going to have snappy letters page titles. That was one of the cornerstones of the new universe.
Real-time progress, realistic, science. And no letters page funny titles.
Yeah, just remember the P.O. box.
Okay. Once the dam breaks, it all comes so quickly. Cover dated June 1988. And we believe hit the stands March 8th, 1988. We have our new DP7 logo, Displaced Paranormals. New Universe is just a little thing. Small logo under Marvel over... price box. I don't know what I'd call that, but we have a fairly grabby coverish image this month. We've got Dave Landers Mastodon sort of being taken aback as a new character is leaping towards him and sort of grabbing him and looks like he's ready to punch him. New character is got an eye patch, teeth like, I don't know, the Hulk, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's got some extra like weapons strapped to his back, like a sawed off shotgun and a Final Fantasy VII Buster Sword. I can't quite.
That's a little small, but
okay.
It's got a lot of the classic hallmarks of like wasteland apocalyptic guy, you know. There's like a little bit of chain, some ripped shirt, some like the fingerless gloves, spikes, scars.
Yeah, he calls out that he's the humongous and you must send out your gasoline or whatever. It has a thing that says it came from the pit. Pitbull. And let's again notice that instead of using two T's, they just use the one instead of being Pitbull. Sort of underneath in the background, you see Randy and Jeff, but they don't seem to be involved in the fight. So action oriented, as we say. Turning inside, we have a good splash page of Dave Landers again. This time he's back where he was just before the end of last issue, when he was at the bottom of the pit expecting to go into a... We actually had some discussion at the time of whether it was water that was boiling or it was actual lava that was coming up. And this time we see actual lava coming up and about to consume him on a rock outcropping. And Dave is yelling, "Ah, I'm on fire." And he is.
Right. Also with 1 foot in the lava. So
it's like you could kind of crunch up there a little bit more, but
yeah.
Okay.
That's a nice touch because his foot is injured from falling last time. So like if he's dreaming. Oh, sorry.
Spoilers.
Okay. Spoiling the next page.
Just trying to build suspense there. Come on. We had the title War Dogs, as we say. So turning the page, we have actually everyone is outside of the pit.
Wait Dave a minute. Didn't the solicit call it Wild Dogs? Now it's War Dogs. Which one is it?
War Dogs. Don't make me stop and go look.
Oh, sorry. You're
right. Probably.
What was the bad biker movie? Up? Wild Hogs? Maybe we should just go with Wild Hogs.
I will not be able to check my own.
my screen says Wild Dogs.
Transcript, yeah.
Sorry, that was everything... a pointless diversion, probably.
No, it might actually be quite the case that, you know, they always did seem to be a little loose, like they'd change things at the last minute or they just didn't quite get it across the bullpen without a typo or two. So that would be a good callback to our like earlier days when things would be very different from the solicits.
Right.
Anyway. So turning inside, we've got Dave and Jeff are sort of laying down and out of it. They'd been pulled out of the pit last issue with the Spitfire Max armor, some antibodies that had gone down and rescued them. But they don't look to be in great shape. They're in this debris-strewn field where they... You know, everything right outside the pit looks like, a disaster zone. And the other members of DP7, Randy, sort of member Miriam, Charlie, Lenore, sort of member Mutator, and I guess honorary member now, Jenny Swenson, are all around. And let's see, Randy is attending to Dave and telling him to settle down, that he's safe now. Explains he's maybe he's hallucinating or something. The others are like trying to help or look around them. And there's a lot of talk. This is really an issue where you have a lot of people sort of on the page at the same time, all like talking or thinking to each other simultaneously, and it ends up being quite a bit of word balloons there.
I'm sure our crack team of podcasters can handle it.
We have another crack team around here that
can... I heard some non-union podcasters to take over.
Yes. So the, let's see, over on the right side, Jenny Swenson is working on her Max armor And she's like thinking to herself, oh, great. I really did a number on my max armor pulling those two men out of the pit. I don't know if I'll be able to. She's distracted by something. Maybe the mobile oil sign that's right below her.
It's really nicely framed.
Very nice. I think, let's see, we go underneath. Oh, and it's December 24th, 1987, 1:52 p.m. So we go back over and at the lower half of this double page spread or like single or normal panels. Dave is saying his foot hurts and he suddenly notices the max armor. What's that big red thing? Although he's also looking at Jenny Swenson, whose hair is the same color, so.
That would be a little rude, though.
Probably. Jenny thinks, oh no, the sight of my suit is unnerving him further. Yeah, the next panel. Roar! He's like throwing panda bodies all over the place. Man, Dave's really far gone. He must have really been through the ringer down there. Lenore! Yeah, the next best thing to a trank gun that they're always shooting Dave with is Lenore. She comes over and takes off the mask, and Dave's out like a light. Once more, my tranquilizing energies are required, and I must drink the delicious nectar of another living being's life force.
I love that line.
I do too. also, it's also a shout out to Life Force. Not that book movie I like so much. Mm. I think so, yeah. So Lenore is also like, the heck happened to them down there? Jenny, I guess, explains that when they got down there, she got down there with the antibodies, they were perilously close to being submerged in lava, which, okay, now it's lava. And she says the bottom of the pit is perilously close to the Earth's magma layer, and it's a hotbed of volcanic activity down there. Oh, my goodness. So Miriam Sponge says, oh, thank goodness you got that flying armor of yours working in time. And Jenny responds that, I got it working once, but I think I'm out of luck this time. We'll Spitfire. Here we go. Why did she do this? Is going to need a heck of a lot more work before it can take so much as another step. I just don't have the right tools. And she's looking at the helmet of it. She has in her hand.
Notably, not the size of a helmet where a whole person could fit in it, like we see sometimes when they get the scale like wacky.
Darth Vader cosplay helmet. Whereas on the previous page, the helmet was like a barrel of oil. So I don't know. Even Paul Ryan gets the scale.
The Spitfire suit is impossible to draw, apparently.
It's like 12 heads high. Isn't that how you guys do it? I don't know. So, bad news with the Spitfire suit. Meanwhile, Randy's, of course, the doctor, he's looking at Jeff and saying, we've got to get him to shelter quickly. He's losing heat rapidly. But Jenny says, without my armor, your big friend is going to be next to impossible to move. And Randy thinks to himself, this woman saved Dave's life. Jeff's too. Oh, it's not as impressive. Guess that makes up for her accidental killing of one of my antibodies. Also last issue. Yeah, she accidentally blasted an antibody. Anyway, we'll see the first hints of this increased militarization of the new U. As one of its oldest members is surprisingly militarily adept now. But anyway, get ahead of myself. There's a big crackoom, big, you know, sound that they're all confused by. And Mutator, this extra that they picked up in the clinic, says, I'm going to go see what it is. Be back soon. And he leaps over a rock or something. Mutator, be careful, says Lenore. And Mutator is really like a very, has got a lot of low self-esteem thought bubbles going on all the time. Mm-hmm. Yep. Almost sounds like she cares what happens to me.
Almost. And don't get your hopes up, Mutator. Nobody likes you.
Lenore's just looking at you as a you know, source of potential sweet life energy. Jenny's saying, thinking to herself, she'll have to seal up the armor so even if someone does stumble across it, they can't damage the delicate inner works. So she puts the helmet back on it. And again, we sort of pan across a, you know. Meanwhile, Sponge is looking at Dave and thinking how vulnerable that he's helpless and she feels vulnerable now. And Randy is like, where's that mutator going? I don't see, you know. All kind of simultaneously. We have the next panel. Jenny is walking away from the Max armor. I hate having to leave Max behind. Why do I have this sick feeling I'm never going to see it again? Get a grip, Swenson. Fatigue's making you silly. I feel like this is kind of a missed, like, you know, if this is really the last time she's going to see it, like, you could have her kind of a little bit more of a touching, you know, thinking about her past with it or something. I don't know.
At least give us like the homage to Spider-Man leaving the suit in the trash and walking down the alley kind of thing, you know?
All right. Spitfire, no more.
Hey.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We'll talk at the end about how this timeline matches up with what we saw over in Psi-Force recently. Randy tells one of his antibodies to go look for Mutator. And then he and, oh, goodness, who's dragging who here? Well, let's see. They've got Dave and Jeff on, like, doors, and they're pulling them and these sort of improvised gurneys. What do you call that again?
Oh, yeah, the tip of the tongue, but it's not coming.
So, let's see. Lenore has absorbed a lot of energy, so she's feeling strong. Charlie is defrictionizing the bottoms of them to keep them going. So they're all trying to use their powers. But a little later, we have, there's your antibody. Looks like he found Mutator. They drop him off. The antibody drops him off, and he didn't find out whatever he was off looking for. They tell him not to run off again without checking with him. And I notice, says Sponge, you've lost all your spideriness. What are you turning into now? Something furry with claws, a badger, or a wolverine, maybe a mole. I only
wish
one of
you
those.
Were a wolverine. You're a mole, man.
It's like, he would have made the cover if he was turning into a wolverine.
He's got a solid, like, wolfman, like, classic look, you know, kind of like with the hairy face and the flannel shirt.
Yeah, the flannel helps out. Ears are getting pointy.
Hands are hairy. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're like, half hour later, they're all tired and can't do this anymore. They're like, well, we're not going to get it back to the Winnebago at this rate. We better find some shelter. Wasn't it like 1 o'clock in the afternoon? Anyway, Mutator, of course, is like, oh, let me go take a look. And he immediately falls through the roof of something. They come to check on him, and he's like, I found someplace. Wah, wah, wah. But he looks around, he's like, wow, I guess I got the vision of a night mole, or the night vision of a mole. And he's like, all right, come on down. This is great. And you know, he's finally mutating into something useful for the moment. They go down, get the two injured guys downstairs, and there's, you know, a decent basement shelter down there. They find a kerosene lantern, you know, some camping supplies. Mutator finds some canned food. They ought to love me now. That's great, George. Can you see, find a can opener or a knife? No need. And he puts his fingernails right through the lid of one of the cans and opens it up. Ka-chunk, chunk, chunk. Randy takes a look. Great! And thinks to himself, no matter what he does, there's something about that guy that's so hard to like.
That's another one of the lines I really liked on this one. Poor Mutator.
Oh, yeah. He's a... So Randy tries to get Jeff to eat something. You know, he's runs out of energy quickly, so he does need to eat, keep up his strength. Charlie is over a little bit of ways away, thinking poor Jeffrey had lost his family in the pit disaster, and makes her wish she'd gone home for the holidays like her folks wanted. Jenny has found a large blanket. It doesn't smell so hot, but then again, neither do I after a few days shut up inside my armor. Thanks for sharing. So this is to say, let's all try to get some rest. And she says, I make it a rule to never bed down with strangers. I've gathered what most of your names are. My name's Jennifer Swenson. Call me Jenny. Welcome to our Explorers Club, Jenny. And Charlie, of course, thinking, ick, Randy isn't attracted to that army trick, is he? Better not be. Mutator thinks to himself, doesn't look like there's room for me under that blanket. I think we all know that feeling. I'm going to go out scouting. I heard some more explosions. Okay, bye. And, Randy sends an antibody along to keep an eye on him. And then we have this interesting panel with like Randy and the other characters who are all women sort of bedded down underneath this blanket. So left to right, we have Jenny thinking to herself, other than their paranormal talents, they seem like nice, normal people. And this doctor fellow is quite interesting. And Randy... a hand on my leg. Charlie's. Then Charlie. I know you have problems with interracial dating, Randy, but I really need closeness now. Please take my hand.
She's thinking but that. Yeah.
She's thinking, yes. Lenore, this intimacy makes me uncomfortable. And finally, Miriam. Wonder if there's any subtle way I can slip out of this huddle and go keep David warm. No, there is not.
No, there is not.
Then we have single panels of Jenny, Randy, and Charlie. Forgive the details, but it's too salacious to pass up. I've been through so much since I was dropped into the pit last week. After a while, I went numb, couldn't feel anything anymore. I think some feelings returning. I guess this is... which feelings is left to the imagination? Randy, what? Now Jenny's put her hand on my leg? I'd better take it. Keep her from touching Charlie's hand on my other leg. I'm not going to get any sleep tonight. And then finally Charlie. Randy, don't hold my hand like it was a dead fish. Let me know you mean it.
Of course, you know, as a man, you can't even hold a hand right.
I don't know. We'd kind of talked about how Randy seemed like a central character and then he wasn't. And now we've got like two girls fighting over, sort of like trying to outmaneuver each other over him, possibly. Although it's kind of ambiguous of how interested Spitfire is. But anyway, another kaboom. What was that? Antibody comes back, touches with itself to Randy, which is his way of transmitting information, which he explains also. And Mutator is under attack. Men with guns. They look scruffy like scavengers. And one of them is huge, like Dave. We got to go out and help him. Jenny says, yeah, somebody's going to have to stay here with the wounded. You're the doctor. That's your job. The rest of us will go see to Mutator. Charlie's not too into that idea. I'm not going to go face to men with guns. And Randy, again, the only ambulatory male in this group. Wait, I'm responsible for these people, Mutator included. And Jenny's like, you've been through commando training, combat maneuvers, military strategy? No, but neither have they. You should think we should just let the mole guy fend for himself? No, then it's settled. Come on, ladies. Wow. Years ahead of its time, we have the all-female strike force, DP7 minus two or three, plus one or two.
Notably, Jenny picks up a rake off the wall as her weapon.
Weapon of choice.
Miriam has a little, like a small shovel.
And yeah, Lenora doesn't need anything. And Charlie's thinking to herself, if I don't go, I'll look bad compared to the army chick. Jenny has been so militarized that someone actually like constantly thinks of her as the army chick.
Well, she's wearing the green fatigues.
That's true. Commando training, combat maneuvers, military strategy. That's the Jenny Swenson we all.
I kind of like that part. It's, you know, I mean, she's been doing the CIA Army stuff for a while. So, you know, you know, our DP7 have, you know, had to fight, right? They've been kind of running away or, you know, dealing with situations. Like, you know, she probably is the best choice to send out there and sort of lead a squad as far as things go. Other than the fact that Randy probably has the most combat ready paranormal ability in being able to send out the antibodies, but they just send the antibodies without him, so I guess they don't really need him.
Ouch. Yeah, do you, is your printing look okay on that page?
Yeah, it looks pretty normal.
It's weirdly like the black is faint or something. Okay. Anyway, it's just a one-off, I suppose. Next page, we have the ladies out walking through the darkness. And ahead, we have a panel of Mutator on the ground with three... indeed scruffy figures looming over him. One of them, two of them making threatening talk. Okay, Furface, you're a prisoner of the war dogs. Now you got 10 seconds to tell us one good reason not to shoot you so full of lead they'll chop you up to make pencils. And the other guy, will you dispense with that counting crud, Rover? We all know you don't know what comes after three. I'm turning him into dog food.
Burned his own war dog. We all know you can't count, Rover. Quiet down, girl.
These guys are very, yeah, like road warrior, survivalist, scavenger, whatever. According to the timeline, the pit happened like a day and a half ago. Society completely collapsed and these guys are off running a whatever.
We all know about you Pennsylvania Hill people.
We're pretty close to West Virginia here. By the way, the figure in the middle, there's like a redhead who's kind of skinny and like back a little further. I'm guessing that's a girl.
Yeah. You have to be one tough girl to hang out with those idiots though.
You
get a little better look later on, but
they're thinking to themselves, what a freak of nature makes the boss look like a playgirl pinup. It just seems like, you know, that's a person like kind of, I don't know if disguised, but they're kind of held back and you don't really get a good look at them, but
we don't get a name for that one either, so.
Right. Anyway, I don't know if we'll see more of these people next issue. So, these guys are all like about ready to shoot Mutator. Jenny says and the other ladies are seeing this from a distance, and so they sort of sketch out a plan and send the antibodies, I guess, to the ground to go attack them from behind, which they do. Charlie tries to make the gun slippery, which doesn't quite work, but the antibodies just smack the guns out of the scavenger's hands anyway. Lenora jumps down yelling Veni Vidissimi Vici, which is a interesting they translated I came, I was seen, I conquered. Lenore, the Latin teacher, of course. But that does manage to put everyone out. The scavengers, the antibodies, and Mutator all hit the ground. Cute bit from one of them trying to attack Lenore with a knife. Don't know what you're doing, Bim, but I ain't gonna. And he's on the ground. And Lenore saying, I am not a Bim. This time it's personal. So the next page, they're like, oh, great. Now we got to carry Mutator back. Must be a gang of looters. Somehow they managed to get state of the art army weapons. And as they're thinking about what they're going to do, there's a small rise and jumping over the top of it.
Oh, you forgot the aru. Oh, at the time. It's when you really think Scooby's coming.
Yeah, you've got a warning from, what was that? It doesn't sound human. And then he jumps over. Grrr. And Jenny, shoot first, ask questions later. Swenson takes off, gets a shot off on one of the rifles they got from the looters. What's going on around here? Pitbull demands to know. It's the... Some characters really make an entrance when he appears.
Yep.
We've got, he lands. Jenny takes a more aimed shot at him and yells out, get to cover. The pit bull keeps heading towards her. You're making me mad, Runt. She gets another shot. I've shot him twice. Point blank. He's still coming. He smacks the rifle out of her hand. Why didn't I aim for his head? What do you say? I nibble on your face, Runt.
So he's about him in the neck, too. So, clearly, this guy's made of something.
So we see Lenore just behind him. He'll kill her unless I've got to get his attention. She picks up a handgun. I gotta say, they are doing pretty well for themselves, even when they're not using their powers in terms of picking up weapons.
Right.
I mean, honestly, I would be like the guy who doesn't know the safety's on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not working. Click, 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 click,
click, click, click. Yeah. So she unloads several rounds into him from and his back, which doesn't do much but distract him. He's like, another broad with stones. Jenny ducks out of the way. And even though Lenore is shining her light on him, why is your puss glowing like that? You got a flashlight in your mouth? Well, I'll show you something about shiners. Charlie's in hiding, but she's thinking Nori's power isn't working on him. I'll make him stick to the ground. Now, what is this? He's got now clumps of dirt under his boots, but he's still walking towards it. Which how'd you like to see that lad of yours come at you? And Jenny, explode it first if you can't. If at first you don't succeed, just explode it. Throws a grenade at him. She looks curiously cross-eyed in that panel. There's something.
Yeah, that turned out a little funky.
Yeah,
but her aim is true with that grenade. Either way.
Yeah, it goes off right underneath him. It's nice sort of color and inking combination to make a very, pit bulls in the middle of the explosion. Next thing you know, Jenny and Lenore are dragging Mutator away, trying to get him out of there. And they're not sure if Pitbull is dead, but they don't want to wait around and find out either. They head up this rise. Charlie and Sponge are there. And Miriam, a.k.a. Sponge, Jenny, I'm sorry I haven't been any help to you. Or save it, Miriam. No one's hurt, and that's all that counts. I notice you're thin again. Yeah, I leak when I'm frightened.
Don't we all, Miriam? There's adult undergarments to help with that, though. So,
yeah, it's you know, it would have looked like, you know, using a literally like a squirt gun on Pitbull if she had tried to fight him. So, okay.
Yeah, if the shotgun didn't work, the water blast probably won't. But maybe she could drain water from him. I mean, you'd have to like hug him or something. So probably not a good plan, but it could dehydrate him.
That's true. Yeah, she wasn't like heavy, like she had been soaking up water that she could use as a weapon. So would have been pretty minimal, whatever it was. So yeah, soaking it from him might have done well. That she'd done that an issue or two ago and some success against normies. There's another Aru, and Miriam just takes off. Sponge, she's panicking. The other women grab Mutator and hide inside an abandoned car, and Pitbull, coming for you, runts, coming for you, walks right past them and is chasing after Miriam. So Miriam is running back to where they were before. She finds Randy. Sponge, what's wrong? Where are the others? He's terrible. Huge. Lenorcan, stop him. And then he, Pitbull, busts through the roof of this shelter. And it's Randy and Sponge standing there. Dave is on the floor. And there's one antibody that immediately gets like smashed out of the way. I ain't killed no one in over an hour. I want red meat. He smashed Harpo. That is really about all Randy has at his disposal at the moment. So he's like, I gotta do something. Lure the brute away from Sponge, Jeff, and Dave. So he picks up a stick and is like, tries to, you know, antagonize him and make a run for it up the stairs. He's like, I hit him in the head with a 2x4 and he didn't even blink. Must be a paranormal. Yes, must be a paranormal. Miriam is over at talking to Dave, and she does use her power to sort of splash his face with water. Dave, you have to wake up. You have to, or we're all going to die.
Wet blast in the face.
Pitbull is coming after Randy. Pound you to paste, Pulp. You're too cute to live anyway.
Like, man, Randy, I mean, sorry, that Jenny, Charlie, and now Pitbull all like Randy.
Wow, those looks are killer. Remember, Randy is loosely based on Mark Harmon, who was people's sexiest man alive, and there's around this time frame, I think. So
would have been funny if Pitbull like coincidentally had his hand on Randy's leg too. little missed opportunity there. Get under this blanket, boy.
It's good times. We have another but now even Pitbull is what the. And as we turn the page, we have, yes, Dave Landers is up. Pitbull's taken aback. Am I seeing things? Somebody uglier than I am. Ouch. Miriam's like, Dave, that man calls himself Pitbull. He's strong and mean. And Dave thinks, looks fuzzy to me. Pitbull's not too friendly with this. I hate guys uglier than I am, and immediately rams himself right into Dave, who's standing up against the wall barely.
Dave is just like barely standing. He's got like a splint on his injured leg, you know. He's leaning up against the wall, just, you know, not really in fighting shape.
Yeah, he really looks like he's just gonna fall over in a second, but Pitbull like just takes after him like a bulldozer right away. Dave's thinking to himself, got to remember everything the woodsman taught me about fighting back in issue 11. And Miriam's running out of the way. We saw Jeff on the floor a little bit earlier. Luckily, they're not like rolling on top of him. Dave hits Pitbull. Feels like I hit steel. So he tries to stand up, and Pitbull comes after him some more. How them teeth taste? Sponge Grit drags Jeff out of the way so that he doesn't get stepped on in all this at that point. You enjoying this as much as I am, Hairball? It's a backhand, and Dave is flying. And then as Dave's kind of assessing his situation, Pitbull grabs the water heater and then clubs it with it. No more, please. You saying something, skunk bag? And then Pitbull, using the move that he'll become famous for, does go ahead and try to sink his teeth into Dave's shoulder. Chomp the chump. Ah! You guys wanted edgy anti-heroes? Here you go. A cannibal. Isn't that cool? Here you go.
He just likes biting people.
You guys liked the Wolverine versus the Hulk? Now they're both of them in one character. He's also a cannibal.
This is predicting the future of our elementary school classrooms. Teachers are tired, exhausted, only got so much left in the tank, and kids are going crazy and biting people.
It's 2023 in a nutshell. It's Pitbull versus Dave Landers. Dave throws him over. You animal. That's what I am, all right, beef jerky. Pitbull, meanest and hungriest of the war dogs. Sure, we just got ourselves together like 12 hours ago. So we don't exactly have a lot of long-standing military traditions, but okay.
Hey, you got to start somewhere.
So, yeah, maybe they'd been hiding in the woods since the Civil War, except it is the new universe, so 1987. Anyway.
Maybe these are the people at the Pit Aid concert's supposed to help.
You know? It's supposed to be a support.
Pitbull, they sent him like $1 billion. And you know, instead of using it on housing, he bought guns. And a lot of beef jerky.
It would be great if there were like all these posters like with him on it at the Pit Aid concert. Don't you want to help Pitbull? He's like, he's looking sort of hungry, but he's also like wanting to eat you. And yeah, okay. Your shoulder tasted good, Baldy. Bet your face will taste even better.
Eesh.
And Dave grabs sort of his upper and lower jaw. Bite on this, pal. And pulls to like crack his jaw open and then throws him into a wall.
It's a beautiful and rough three panels of like, you know, thankfully unhinging the man's jaw is off panel with the crack sound as you see Dave's face and then like smashes him into the wall like a torpedo, where again his head is obscured because it's just crushed into the basement wall.
Oh, next page. Pitbull is lying there in a pile of rubble. Dave's collapsing. Sponge is happy. Oh, David, you beat him. You beat him. Yeah, whoopee. Need some help. He's collapsing, and we see, and Randy's coming up, and the three of them look up at one of those like very cinematic moments, click, 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 click. And through this hole in the roof that was, Pitbull had fallen through, we see like a dozen U.S. Army. This is the U.S. Army. We have you surrounded. Don't move or we'll shoot. Next, soldiers. Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, man. Somebody's going to get drafted.
The draft is coming, guys. The draft is coming. We do have some nice follow-up stuff. We have a map of the clinic and the sort of the whole grounds and then the inner paranormal investigation unit plans, blueprints. We've got official handbook style bios for Friction, aka Charlie, and Antibody, aka Randy. And yeah, Randy is 10 years older than Charlie.
There's not like a ton of super interesting stuff in the bios. There's some some nice details, I guess, but it did kind of make me think, is if his birth date was, if he was born in 1958, right? So like we're reading this now, but you know, he really was born in a much earlier time. So, you know, the questionable racial bias might make a little bit more sense, you know?
Yeah. He's 65 today. I don't know. Yeah. It's a good question. If he gets, he's like in high school, out of high school in what, 76? About? Yeah. I don't know. Small town, Wisconsin. Yeah. I don't know. It's a, the past is another country, they say. Mm. Yeah. Charlie's from the big city of Racine, Wisconsin. But yeah, they're, before we get into the paranormal and everything. So the story today, a lot of action.
Yep.
Still somehow lots and lots of talk.
Right. Yep. Well, 8 characters, right? So,
and at any given time, there'll be about 6 of them on a panel and all of them thinking or saying something.
Except for Jeff. He's pretty much out for the whole thing. So
that's true. We get a little bit sort of more familiar with Mutator. I don't know if Sponge really, we're growing too much. But Jenny is kind of like quickly becoming part of the team. Interesting. Some of our regulars are out, but I don't know. Pitbull, like I said, I kind of joke because it's like, is he like supposed to be some like anti-hero or like a commentary on them somehow? I don't know.
Hmm.
It's like,
what would make you think hero, I guess, though, right? I mean, he's just,
that's the thing. Yeah, he's
kind of like classic wild bad guy, right?
Yeah, but it's also like, I don't know. I mean, since I think he'll be around in the future, it's like, isn't he cool? He's even tougher. He's even meaner. He's even more like ready to eat human flesh. Maybe he's done it already.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I saw him more as like, you know, I mean, we've had paranormals, but this is sort of paranormal gone wrong. So like my read of this, and I don't remember if this is true or ever gets explained or anything like that, is like maybe the pit created him, right? So rather than the white event.
That's a good question. Maybe, yeah, yeah. I kind black of wondered about that somehow myself.
Gave him that weird power, and that's why he's kind of a little twisted, right? So he didn't kind of come out normal. So yeah, super powerful, but he's a little crazy, you know.
Yeah, that is interesting. I
plus think Pit Bull, right? You know, created by the
pit. Yeah, yeah. Even weirder if it's, yeah, he's only been like this for 12 hours. Well, at least he probably didn't have time to eat a lot of people in that time frame, so that's probably good.
We did have time to set up a dog name themed mercenary / you know, end of the world apocalypse scavenger unit. So
hey guys, it's go time. Remember those plans that we made, all those? Okay. Yeah, the
I want to know more names of these war dogs, right? We got Pitbull, Rover, and Mongrel, right? Like
right
it's gotta
there
be
should
more.
Be like a bigger group than just like 3 followers. But he's the leader, obviously. He hasn't, maybe there were more and he ate one of them. I don't know. But
yeah.
I mean, seriously, you've still got canned food there. It's not like 100 years later and you have to like, I mean, this is also like well before Silence of the Lambs. So it's not like
true.
Being a cannibal was cool and edgy.
Yeah, I guess I got kind of swept up in it when I was reading it because I didn't pick up on it like you did. It's like, okay, it doesn't really make sense that we have these roving bands of scavengers, like really not long after an event, like looters maybe, but you know, they look kind of dedicated to it. So,
I mean, if this was even like the Star brand issue 2 months later, I'd be like, okay, I don't know. There's like, or maybe that, you know, I mean, you know, things go to chaos and you have something like this going on, but we've got some unnatural time compression here. We've got the this is like the 24th maybe, so according to the pit, Pit happens on the 22nd, when we all know it happened on the 19th. But on the 22nd, and then there's the first 12 hours are covered in the Pit book. And then, so the 23rd is when the clinic, they hear about it at the clinic and they start driving out. So it's like the 23rd, 24th. So this is all very like close to the bone here.
Yeah.
It is a good question because I'd thought about like a second wave of mutations based on the Black event, but I hadn't really thought of like, what if these were like inherently bad mutations, you know, like
right.
These are all going to be like a anti. Yeah. Okay. Possibly. So I don't know. This is somehow exhausting, honestly.
Well, you did just have to read it for everybody, but
yeah, the overall story was fast moving, sort of more action than we usually get. It does, like I say, bring out some interesting aspects of Jenny Swenson. Like, she's been in the CIA for a while now, and she's now more like Thomas Boyd from Psi-Force, like the one who has some training and some knowledge about how to do these situations. Okay. I kind of, you know, like I say, you could have like a moment or two where it's a little bit of a callback to like, oh, if only my dad could see me now, you know, shooting people as fast as I can, or, you know, oh, goodbye, Spitfire. You're the only connection I had to my father now.
But that's not even the same suit, I guess. So.
That's true. Okay.
I kind of like the Jenny Swenson in here because at least we got like one piece of what her character maybe should have been, right? So kind of like independent on her own, like, you know, for so long in her own book, and then in the other tie-ins she's been basically just screwed around by the CIA, right? She's got a crazy person as a partner for a little while, like, you know, a cast of people that can kind of like push her around and run her through these like unrealistically safe training exercises and, you know, questionable missions. You know, here she's just kind of out on her own trying to survive, try to help people, kind of takes charge of a ragtag band of paranormals because she's got some of this army training kind of stuff, and holds her own a little bit, cops a feel, like, you know, she's doing her own thing now, and like finally off of the yoke of the CIA, which I kind of like. So it's like, finally doing something on her own, you know.
She's more active. I sometimes wonder if like the bullpen back there was really like, I think we should have Jenny Swenson date my character in my book. I think we should have her date my character in my book.
With the loss of our well-loved Ken Connell version, yeah, she can take up the mantle, you know. It's like, I like the way the jeans fit that doctor guy, you know. It's like,
Oh, so checking finally our Marvel age, it was Wild Dogs in the solicitation. So it was War Dogs in the final, Wild Dogs in the solicit.
Still War Dogs.
So yeah, I don't know. I assume because the army had made it there that they will also arrest the War Dogs, but the rest of the War Dogs, but we'll see. They're not all in the same location as the Pitbull Mastodon throwdown.
Yeah, way to show up when we no longer need you, U.S. Army, right?
So the timeline also doesn't match what we were told in Psi-Force about Jenny being off for a week or two, and then the suit being off around for another, like her being arrested a week or two later, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. So I suppose this issue and that Psi-Force issue were kind of being written at the same time, so
I'm gonna just say that this one makes a little bit more sense. They both sort of end with the suit in the same place, so it doesn't really matter too much, but right. I mean, it's a little unfortunate. Like, I'm going to go rescue people. She did save Dave, but I don't know that she's done anything else.
Unmutate her.
Oh, unmute. Okay. So it's all worthwhile, like, in a way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, though, I guess, if... I mean, we're assuming Jenny's captured, but really, at this point, they've got, you know, Randy, Dave, Jeff, and Sponge, right? So, like, you know, they may have roped in everyone, right? But they're separate for now, so it's possible that we get a divergence of teams again.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, Jenny's off in the car, so she was also not there. Yeah. So yeah, we could. Lots going on. We have, well, let's see. Grade?
You want to overinflate it? I guess I'll go A-. I enjoyed this one quite a bit.
Okay.
How do you go wrong with all the, like, Randy grabbing under the covers plus a big battle?
I'm going to give it a B+. I liked but not loved.
You're off the podcast.
It's two separate podcasts going forward now. Anything from Paranormal?
Like to point out? Well, last time I think I was bothered that they weren't talking about, like, the race war sort of clinic battle issues, and this time they went full on into that. Like, there's just four letters, three of which are really, really long. A lot of complaining.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a couple. Yeah, you say these all sort of respond to the race war storyline. Generally, I mean, people have you know, their own sort of feelings about this. One from New Brighton, that's just up the road here. Said he's been destroyed in the pit, but he's still mostly worried about racism in the fictional universe. Okay.
Yeah.
Some of them were interesting. I think you get... so, yeah, it's good and realistic. One's like... That's it. Yeah, the second one here, it's like the impression one. You know, it's when they, like, start finger wagging a bit.
I think, yeah, the impression
that black one gets militants, if not actually responsible for the problems facing blacks, nevertheless make matters worse because of their extremism. This harmful myth has been applied to black men and women of vision for centuries. And then he later talks about it. So, in summary, the reader comes away thinking that black militants include the like of Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, and Webb Dubois. provoke violence, are equatable with rednecks, and create problems where none exist. Well, you know, as so, you know, the storyline was what is expected to generate. Controversy, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a good, thoughtful statement from the editor here that this wasn't about black militants. It was about people, black and white, most of whom had an opinion about interracial relations. We tried to show the spectrum of attitudes, white people who are obvious bigots, Randy, Freefall, and Tangler. I'm just kidding about Randy. White people who could be friends with blacks but wouldn't want to marry one, Randy. White people with no opinions, Dave, Miss Newhouse, your beloved podcaster. Black people who are obvious bigots, Blind Spot, Chill. Black people who are subject to peer pressure, Charlie, Squirm. And black people who are adamant non-militants, Jeff. If providing a range of people with diverse opinions isn't dealing accurately with blacks, we can only wonder what would be. Anyway, they say they have more fan mail, so thanks for everyone for taking the time and interest in their work.
Yeah, the second letter is interesting because it's like, you know, it was kind of negative, like, all right, the book is finally getting interesting again, and then they complained about the fake swear words. But then I thought, like, the I guess fourth one, again with the race, was kind of interesting, if not sort of historically. They say Craig Romano in New Hampshire says, I wish that after the 1960s that racism had become an archaic term, but unfortunately in this day and age of Reagan, Bork, and Meacham, it is far worse than it has ever been post-civil rights struggles. Racism in America has been increasing while media exposure of it has been decreasing. So it's like, does every generation think that racism is the worst it's ever been? Like, is that where we're at this point?
I'm gonna say yeah. So I mean, that's an interesting like, because yeah, you I mean, I remember, well, Reagan, of course, Bork tangentially, and Meacham is something I kind of remember from like a Doonesbury cartoon. I think he was like a governor who had, like, I don't know, if made a joke that wasn't like in good taste, or but it was like some, you know, no one remembers now deal.
Yeah, clearly.
But it's like, yeah, I mean, it's you know, people have had strong feelings about this, and that sort of maybe leads them to think this is the worst time that has ever been for this, blah blah blah. But let me just point out that Craig Romano lives in New Hampshire, which is, according to my demographic database, 98.4% white. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure Maine is slightly whiter.
That's so yeah, he talks a little about how comics in the 60s fell into a trap portraying racial tensions in sort of idealized ways, and is he saying that it's more realistic in the new universe?
Yeah. In the real world, racism exists, and now it is finally portrayed in the new universe. The new universe is not much different than ours, and you know that white America may have trouble with black superheroes. I'm like, I don't really know that anyone does have trouble with black superheroes. At least not most people. I mean, yeah, people can complain there's not enough or not a lot of original characters, but...
Yeah, I mean, the new universe is not like the Milestone universe, which is to say it's probably it is not making, like, you know, every attempt to diversify its groups, but there is diversity in them, and it's not just, you know, racial diversity and gender diversity. It's a diversity of opinions, as they say, and the attitudes that each of those characters have. Characters are generally well realized and feel more, you know, like authentic people, with, like, not just giving you a party line. Right. And I appreciate that. And today's somewhat more sensitive age, you know, it's nice to have something that's a little refreshing in some ways, of like, you know, don't be like everyone 5 years before this and a million years before, you know, from 5 years ago to everything past that, you know, everyone was a terrible racist. And
you know, yeah, a lot of people, I think, talking about DP7 would say that, like, you couldn't do those issues today, like the race war in the clinic kind of thing, like that wouldn't get by, or, you know, they wouldn't feel like comfortable publishing it kind of thing, which is probably sad, right? Like, you can't.
Yeah, we really made progress if it's like, oh yeah, we no one will actually say anything out loud for fear of, like, getting canceled. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, like they said, you know, there's, you know, of all of the paranormals, right, some of the black characters had good motivations and some had bad and were kind of racist, and some of the white paranormals were good and bad and everything in between, right? That seems honestly quite reasonable, right? And I do like that they went with kind of showing some flaws in, you know, everyman Randy, you know, the aspiring kind of guy. You're like, hey, he's a doctor, he's smart, he's a leader, he's got a cool ability. I'm like, he's a little iffy with the black people. So he's not perfect, right? And I think we kind of finished that in the end. It's like, you know, we aim to simply use the racism issue as a backdrop for what we saw was a love story, but unlike in Romeo and Juliet, where the lovers were able to overcome their family backgrounds, well, they also died, Randy couldn't.
Most romantic story ever.
Yes, there were unlikable traits. There are unlikable traits in our DPs, traits that lie dormant until circumstances bring them forth. Before they were paranormal, they were normal, with the same hang-ups, prejudices, or qualities anyone might have. I guess we have to look elsewhere for perfect role models, huh? So it's probably well said there, I suppose.
I'll give it a B plus plus now that I've read this letter.
I added an extra plus.
So we get a couple of ads. Which one is going to assassinate the attempt to assassinate the president again?
Yep, I'm still going with blowout on that.
Okay. On sale this month. Wait, Star Brand is this month?
That's all the issues we already covered.
I don't know. I thought that was coming up next month. Yeah, I've got it going with the 21s. And next issue, Death of the Clinic. Uh-oh.
Yeah, geez.
We've got a, I think I'm going to say Bazooka and Scrap Iron and several of the other paranormals sort of facing off against an army or police gang.
Yeah, I can only assume that the... I don't know. Maybe it's totally unrelated to capturing Randy and them. And it's just like finally people are coming down on the clinic. And
that's kind of what I was thinking was like, you know, they left the clinic, but like maybe there's nothing to go back to by the, you know, although it's only been a couple days. So I don't know where our timeline's going to go on this. So but yeah. At some point, we're going to have to move forward on it. And it could be like 2 or 3 months later by the time we get back to the story.
I'm hoping for no major deaths.
Certainly, there's one of the female characters is like laid out there, and you know, I do hate to see character deaths as well. There's
right. She could have been under there grabbing the third leg or something.
Yes,
we could have a three-way battle for Randy.
Man, fan fiction's getting spicier the more we go through on here.
Antibodies would make great prison guards and the Caged Heat issue of New Universe that we were talking about last time.
So I wanted to take another note that Star Comics had ended about this month or the month before. There wasn't really an announcement. We were talking about like Shadowline Comics had just started this like imprint in under Epic. Well, it was a line of three like interrelated titles.
Okay.
But Star, which was along with the New Universe, was like an independent imprint. You know, there was logos, branding on the covers and everything. Several of those books are continuing, but they're not called Star Comics anymore. They're just Marvel Comics. Top Cat and Heathcliff and what have you.
Right. Care Bears.
Care Bears. Ewoks, maybe.
Yeah.
So I didn't really so that was you know, something I'm not sure why they're toning it down with the imprints here. Looking at the Wikipedia for Star Comics, it's kind of interesting. They were actually Marvel was in talks to purchase Harvey Comics, the Richie Rich and Casper the Friendly Ghost publisher in the early 80s. Boy, they would have, like, they were almost in talks to purchase DC Comics or license them. If they'd have, like, done Harvey as well, I mean, it would have been, like, everything but Disney. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe Archie. So, yeah, the Wikipedia talks a little bit how, like, it used to be a little more clear. You'd have these kiddie comics, like the DuckTales, you know, Disney stuff. You had the Richie Rich and all those. And then there was sort of a middle range with like Archie, And then you'd sort of graduate to Marvel or DC, these sort of late teen books. So this is already in late 80s. So Star was like maybe Marvel thinking, well, okay, if we can't buy Harvey, we'll just sort of create our own titles along those lines, and which they'd run for 3 or 4 years at this point, I guess, and are now closing down or folding into the main lines. Interesting that you've got already this, you're sort of losing that like feeder into comics, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like several of those, yeah, Harvey is going broke, Disney's stopped publishing, and Archie's kind of always like, it's around, but not in very, you know, widely, you know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, already in the 80s, even though you've got this like great year of comics, it's already like getting harder to get kids into comics. And now it's been like a generation.
Yeah, it's done right now. It's like you've something else filled in the gap, right? You know, kids might read manga. You know, that's fairly popular even with like, you know, teenagers and middle school kids now, or you know, like the little comic-y kind of books, you know, the Diary of a Wimpy Kid kind of stuff, which is, you know, half book, half comic book kind of stuff. And go to the comic book store and there's nothing. Yeah,
it's I don't know. They got sort of snuck up on and sort of fooled themselves into thinking, well, comics is doing great. Look at all this manga and Dog Man, you know, and you're like, yeah, that's, you know, just because like the bookstores are selling this stuff doesn't seem to be translating into anyone coming into your store looking for this stuff.
Yeah, no.
And yeah. So anyway, it's a just a little like industry watch note there.
From 1988.
From 88, yeah. It's interesting to me is to see these imprints kind of like starting and stopping around the new universe, because it was one of the most, you know, well-defined, obviously. All the books started at a certain point. Everything was, you know, sort of designed to be discrete, you know, this own self-contained universe and its own line of books.
Yeah, maybe worth mentioning another time, but like, I feel like Jim Shooter's Valiant universe must be starting up around now or soon or something like that.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye, go look at the, you know, what was on the stands on when those started coming out. Probably before the end of the new universe, I'll assume we'll start getting something from Valiant.
Yeah.
But yeah, like we said before, New Universe was one of the first attempts to do this. And so you've seen other people try it since then. And so Shadowline's like already learning some of their lessons. And you'll see more things coming out in the future similarly.
Indeed.
Anyway.
That's it for this week.
Finally.
Next time, the new universe checks in on our displaced teen paranormals.
Whoops.
Psi-Force 21.
Oh, boy, someone really goofed up here.
No, they're displaced and they're paranormals. It kind of works.
Psi-Force 21. The CIA has sent Spitfire to Canada to capture Wayne and Tyrone. Wayne's got a plan to escape the armored assassin, but it means turning his back on the people who've been helping him. Spitfire, Teeth and Blood is written by Fabian Nicieza, penciled by Ron Lim, and inked by Mike Witherby. So, yeah, we saw that backup issue. Codename Spitfire, Jake Travis has taken over the armor that Jenny abandons here. So
didn't Wayne just psychically push him to go drown himself in the river or something? Like, does he need an epic plan? I don't know. We'll find out, I guess.
All right, Jake. Next time you think it's cool to be like a split personality, think again. Yeah. Think again.
You know, there's somebody you want to get stuck in an eternal brain loop. But anyway, if you're bored and you're an eternal brain loop, kickersinc.com for all your Kickers Inc. needs. Also, you won't, but you can email us at newuniversepodcast@gmail.com. This has been the voice of the new universe. And we'll see you back at the spinner rack.
It's your universe, idiot.
Hey, it was only supposed to make a buzzing noise.